This is called to order of the Planning Commission meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. We are at Community Recreation Center. My name is John Dredge. I'm filling in for the chair and vice chair. Hopefully, one of them will arrive soon. We'll begin with the public comments section. We remind you all of a couple of things. First, you have 3 minutes for your public comments. We ask you all to be respectful of one another and of the time that we have. So we do have quite a few people that have signed up for public comment. First is Ken Hazelbaker. Sir.
My name is Ken Hazelbaker, and we live in the Reed Swenson home.
Hi.
That's the home that is directly across.
Can we differentiate between this is the public comment. There's two sections here. There's a public comment that's generally about anything within the city that the public would like to comment on. And then there's the public hearing, which is regarding the Oak Road parcel in specific. Now, the sign-ups may have not been very clear.
They said public comment.
So is there anybody that is here not for the public hearing that's here for something other than the Oak Road parcel? That would be your time to speak in the public comment.
Yeah, that's my only one. I figured there'd be nobody here. So, just being a scout, so I thought that would be pretty much what it's about. On the agenda today was synthetic turf. It's Rick Stewart. I live in 4502 Downing Drive, Cedar Hills. So I just want to give a 2.5 minutes of perspective that you can consider if you're thinking about expanding synthetic turf as an option for a landscape for residential homes. I think there's a place for synthetic turf. I think there's a growing place for it, especially in commercial applications and in small applications, places in backyards, things like that. But it's difficult, a difficult thing for a city, I think, to embrace synthetic turf in a large scale. Synthetic turf doesn't process animal waste. It doesn't process anything. It doesn't cool. It attracts heat. It reflects heat. You step on pavement, it's hot. You move to synthetic turf, it's still hot. It doesn't filter pollen. It doesn't filter dirt. It doesn't process anything organically. So if birds die or you have picnics on it or whatever it is, it really is this strange carpet mat. The very best, the very most expensive synthetic turf looks pretty good. It really does. The stuff that isn't the very best does not look very good. And it's cost prohibitive for a lot of people to do the very best. If you're going to open it up, sometimes you got to say, well, you know, what quality of synthetic turf are we going to allow? And then it's kind of a difficult, you know, process there. It also ages weird. So it looks fine when it first comes out, but it ages strange. It just fades like every other plastic plant you ever had. And it's just a weird process. Some people feel it's an environmentally good choice or responsible choice. I don't understand that very well. It's like saying that blacktopping or paving a yard is an environmentally responsible choice. It's just plastic and rubber. It destroys enzymes and other, you know, in soil. It creates an issue that way. Eventually, it's going to end up in a landfill. It just doesn't seem like an organic growing plant is an environmentally less responsible choice than synthetic turf. I'm really done. You guys have a lot of interesting things to talk about, but I'd come in and lay that out, and I hope that you consider. Statistically, 0% of the population is going to be putting in synthetic turf. There'll be tens of thousands of yards being put in Utah across the state, and statistically zero, you know, there won't be a significant number who do it, but those who do create a situation where they just cause issues with their neighbors. They'll end up with something really strange or really odd, and I just don't think it's good for Cedar Hills. I don't think it's good for Utah in any place other than in commercial applications. Thank you. Good luck.
Okay, hold on 1 second, Ken. So now we will move to the public hearing portion, and I'm assuming all of these signups then are for public hearing. Is that correct? All right. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm Ken Hazelbaker. I live at 10253 North Oak Road West. That's the wooded parcel. It's the old Reed Swenson home. But it's the lot just directly west of the open parcel being considered tonight. So anyway, we bought the home 2 years ago. And before we did that, well, hold on. First of all, I got to say thank you to each one of you for being willing to volunteer your time and serve us, your fellow residents of Cedar Hills. I just commend you for the amount of personal sacrifice in research time, meetings, and everything else away from your family and life that you do this. So thank you for what you do. Okay. Anyway, so our family's concern comes from the proposal to rezone this land from open space to the residential, after it's been zoned as open space for about 35 or so years. We specifically bought our home after checking with all the neighbors and then the city plat, and saw it was and had been zoned open space since the beginning. Open space and our own tree-filled lot is a significant value to myself and to our family. I grew up in northern Idaho in 35 acres of forested land. So we could live anywhere we wanted to. That place was really important to us to buy the Swenson home. Anyway, it's kind of like what they say, don't fence me in. That's why that place is so important to us and the land across there. Any of us who buy land, we perform due diligence, or we have our realtors perform due diligence for us. And they try to determine the zoning and any other restrictions on the land. What's the saying? Buyer beware. Well, we assume that the current owner did the same or should have. So we're surprised that this 35-year-old classification is even being considered to be changed. It's like a grandfathered personality of this neighborhood and this part of town. It's been such since the birth of Cedar Hills. It's a part of the charm that really makes Cedar Hills what it is. We're not one of these big fancy gated communities. What's wrong with the way it is now? What about the dream that has always been to have it open? 3 minutes?
3 minutes.
That goes fast. I apologize. We would like to submit a petition here of 157, I don't know who the recorder is tonight, 157 signatures of people in the horseshoe. That includes everybody on Oak Road and those homes that look down. We're all taking a stand for open space. How many want to stand for open space? Please. Stand. Do you want to count or we'll do that later? Thank you.
All right, next would be Ray Lane.
That's me, I'm Ray Lane. I live at 4279 West Oak Road, which is adjacent to this property. Again, I'd like to thank you, members of the Planning Commission and the City Council, for your service to all of us citizens here in Cedar Hills. Our family, we love Cedar Hills. We love the school system, we love the people, we love our neighbors, we love the carnival, the fireworks, we love the park system and the open spaces. We love Taco Amigo and Strawberry Shake. I'd like to share my story of moving to Cedar Hills, which I'm sure is similar to many people in this room. We moved here in 1978. We decided on Cedar Hills because of the natural beauty and views of the valley. We bought a small home on Willow Court and lived there for 13 and a half years. During those 13 years, I served on the city council, helped initiate a cable TV system, helped to organize a youth soccer program in Pleasant Grove, and coached youth soccer for 7 years. We outgrew our home on Willow Court and looked for a piece of property we could build a home. We found the perfect property at the top of Oak Road. It was surrounded by open space that was included in the master plan of Cedar Hills. Just talked to Mark Memmott, one of the mayors of Cedar Hills. He said that open space has been there for 40 years. We checked with the city to be sure that it was still designated open space, and they assured us that it was. We purchased the property in 1989. At our expense, we had to extend the sewer line up the hill, run the gas line, and pay our portion of putting asphalt down on the paved road in front of our house. I want you to know that this story, which again is similar to yours, of our total investment in Cedar Hills. This year marks our 39th year of being here. We ask you to protect and defend our property rights. Consider this change in the zoning along and consider ours. As recent as a year ago, I called Cedar Hills and they said that this open space is still in the master plan. Let me quote this from the general plan of Cedar Hills in 1995. It states, quote, "An open atmosphere has always been an identifying characteristic of the Cedar Hills area. It has perhaps been the primary factor that has drawn people here. A feeling of openness can continue amid residential and other development through the establishment of parks, trails, and open space areas. In addition, the population requires ample recreation space. The city's desire is to build a sufficient network of parks connected by a trail system that will contribute to the healthy, active lifestyles of the residents while also contributing to maintaining the historical feeling of openness." That can be found on that map, page 48. In conclusion, join that property that is being proposed or changed, 12 families. In addition to that, 13 other homes on the other side of the road would be impacted by this change. That's 25 homes in all. And because of the location of our property, we would be the most directly impacted by this change. To add value to one piece of property would affect the value of 25 homes in that area. That's the end of my comments. I appreciate the time. I'm going to leave a copy of my comments. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. And I invite you to, if you haven't already, go walk that piece of property and all the property that is around it to see for yourself what impact this would have on our neighborhood. Thank you.
Okay, next would be Ryan Scott.
That's me. First of all, thank you all for serving on different councils and committees. Do you have a comment?
State your name and your address.
Ryan Scott, 4229 West Sandalwood Drive. So 2 years ago, my wife, six children, and I moved to that address from Austin, Texas, and we love it here. Our home almost directly backs to some of the open space on Oak Road that is the point of discussion this evening. The idea of due process is important, and the concept specifically applies to planning and zoning. Due process seeks for a minimum standard of fairness during the process of making public decisions that impact private rights. Things like proper public notice, a fair hearing that presents all sides of an issue, reasonable and impartial standards, etc. This is designed to protect private citizens against arbitrary and unpredictable decisions. As residents, all of us here have the basic expectation, I think, that our cities and councils, and commissions will be fair, thoughtful, smart, communicative with us about decisions and the processes that lead to those decisions, and ultimately will make decisions that are in the best interest of the city, its residents, and its land. I have no reason to believe that you won't do this. As I've talked with many of our residents regarding this topic, here are four of the most common and important considerations and questions we have regarding the proposed zoning change. First, what is the basis for the city staff's recommendation to rezone this land? Perhaps it is published somewhere and we have not heard it. Regardless, we believe the residents would be interested in understanding all of the rationale and have the opportunity to further discuss it. Second, whatever the ultimate recommendation of your committee and the others, has the City Commission adequately taken into account the fact that so many of its residents paid a premium, very likely totaling over $5 million cumulatively in just premiums for their lots and homes based on both the current zoning being open space as well as the fairly well-known history of how that land was thoughtfully zoned as such? Third, should the rezoning of this land privilege one landowner who likely has no long-term interest in our city over hundreds of residents who care deeply about the city, this city and its space and plan to care for the city and for many years and decades to come? Fourth and last, does the city really have ample recreation and open space? Based on the general plan we have seen, it does not. There seems to be a significant delta between the general plan and our reality regarding open space. This open space we're discussing tonight may very well be essential to meet the goals and needs of our city based on the general plan. As previously stated, the general plan identifies 60.2 acres, which is 2.2 acres less than the city standard. As you know, there is no more land available to be developed into recreation space. Furthermore, it's my understanding that the Harvey parcel on 12.4 acres is questionable for becoming a park, which would further exacerbate the lack of recreational space. Is there not a way for the city to acquire this land and in due time do something wonderful with it for our city and its great residents per the city's general plan? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next would be Sherry Condi.
My name is Sherry Condi. I live at 4221 West Oak Road North. Thank you for this opportunity to address you. I've always felt that the Planning Commission is kind of the best of local control because it's just citizens over there listening to citizens here at the podium. My topic is the definition of open space and its benefits to our city and its children. Wikipedia and the Oxford Dictionary say that open space is an area of land without human-built structures, an urban area of protected land on which development is indefinitely set aside. It's a public space, an area left open for the use of the public as designated by a municipal authority. There's an economic value to open space. If you look up conservation studies online, you'll see that protecting open land stabilizes property taxes, prevents sprawl development, and can save money over land development because open space doesn't require all the public utilities and services. The Trust for Public Land study by Erica Geis makes the most sense to me. Her conclusion is that it can be difficult for a government to weigh the ultimate value of conserving an open space. On one hand, the costs of the project could be intimidating and immediate, but the benefits are usually long-term and may seem vague when compared to the costs. So instead of dollars and cents, a project might be measured in the very real currency of neighborhood recreation, community character, and connection to nature. Each year, economists become more sophisticated in measuring the ways in which open land efforts make financial sense. But in a way, their work only confirms what conservationists have long understood. Expenditures for open space are best understood not as a cost, but as an investment that will pay dividends long into the future. There is psychological value to open space, which can alleviate mental illness. I've already mentioned this in my previous letter to you. We believe that there are lessons in family values that can be taught to our children through protecting open space. There is the lesson of nurturing, protecting the ecosystem, and appreciating the natural life of this earth, such as cedar trees, deer, and birds. There is the lesson of gratitude, that we have eyes to see, ears to hear, and legs to walk in some open land that gives us light and air to lift up our spirits. A lesson of the family value of dependability is now needed in this situation. Let's teach that citizens have a right to depend on and believe in what the city staff, your general plan, and other documents say about the future of where we live and raise our future generations. I'm handing a copy of my talk to the recorder, and I thank you.
Thank you. Next would be Dave Free.
My name is Dave Free. I live at 4309 West Oak Road North. First of all, as I look through the general plan, I see the forethought that was given from 1995 forward. On, you look at in the 40s and 50s, pages 40s through 50s, you'll see all the parks that were thought of and planned out, you know, 25, 30 years ago. And it's amazing that most of those are in place. And this parcel we talk about is one of those pieces. In 1995, a survey was done amongst the residents of Cedar Hills. The number one need for the city above everything else was survey was done about placing parks and recreation areas. This was the number one need for everybody in the city of Cedar Hills. It says, the comment from the Planning Commission was, now is the time to put on the master plan parks along trail routes in each area of town. Trails ranked number two with the comment, very important, could be the most important characteristic of Cedar Hills. Earlier was stated the amount of open space, it should be given, and this is a nerdy number, I guess, if you guys have been reading through the planning guide, that there should be, and it's there's two different numbers put in there. So there's a 5.5 acres per 1,000 residents, and there's also a 6.1 acres per 1,000 residents. That would account for anywhere between 56 and 62 acres. Right now there's 53, and that includes the parcel that we're talking about. And if the Harvey Park is going to be taken away, then that's another portion that is going to be deleted off of that. In the general plan, it says on page 2, the plan allows for orderly growth as more people desire to locate here without losing the feeling of open space and quiet, which makes it such a desirable setting. Necessary public and commercial services need to be provided without creating the bustle of a busy city. Parks, trails, and open spaces need to be protected and further developed. In page 21, the key land use elements. Number 4, which is on page 22, it says preservations of natural environment and open spaces. Cedar Hills and the land use element recognize the importance of the natural environment and open space in the community. Many of the goals and objectives found in this element reflect the community's desire to protect the environment and provide open areas for the use and enjoyment of the residents. Page 43, the general plan, the introduction says, an open atmosphere has always been an identifying characteristic of the Cedar Hills area. It has perhaps been the primary factor that has drawn people here, a feeling of openness that can continue in residential and other development through the establishment of parks, trails, and open spaces. And in conclusion, on page 53, it says, the overriding guiding consideration should be on preserving and enhancing the natural resources and environment wherever possible, and carefully integrate man's work with nature's trails. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next, Ben Smith.
My name is Ben Smith. I live at 10233 North Oak Road West here in Cedar Hills. Dear commissioners, city council members, please go on. City staff and neighbors. Thank you for your dedication to make Cedar Hills an even choicer place to live. We bought our house in 1992, 25 years ago. We are our then neighbor and real estate agent, Cher Hazard. It was with the clear understanding that we bought right across a designated open space lot as described in the city public facility zone. I have served as a precinct captain in Cedar Hills and have been a Rotarian for 31 years. I'm still active in the Timpanogos Rotary Club. In 95, it was my honor to serve as the president of the American Fork Rotary Club. The city conducted a recent city park survey with the intention to get feedback on users and potential changes. I request that the Planning Commission table the rezone until the results have been tabulated and distributed to the public. Also, I'd like to have a copy of the survey. I can't find it on the website anymore since I had been traveling extensively. I would like to have a copy. Thank you for your time and your consideration, and I'll hand you a written copy of my statement. Thank you.
Thank you. Tyler Gardner.
Tyler Gardner, 10218 North Oak Court. I was born and raised in Cedar Hills. Last year, I bought the same home I grew up in from my father, Craig Gardner, who owned the home for 23 years. I bought the home from my father because of the great memories I had of the home and open areas surrounding my home. The open space and the knowledge of it not being changed due to how it has been zoned in the general plan was a huge factor in the purchase of my home. I have witnessed the continuing battle to rezone this open space many times through many years of living here. From discussions with my father and others in the area, before I bought the home, I was assured that it would not happen due to how it had been zoned in the general plan. This issue has continually been kicked down the road with no resolution. I have now inherited this issue, and I want to put this issue to rest. After discussing with many members of the community, we would like the following resolutions. Number one, deny the rezone amendment. Number two, enforce maintenance on the property effective immediately in regards to weed control. According to Title IV, Chapter 2 in the City Code, states weeds on undeveloped lots shall be maintained at a height of no more than 6 inches at any time within 30 feet of any property line, road, or structure. And Title IV, Chapter 2 states that weeds, hedges, and overgrown and uncultivated vegetation that is in a hazardous condition that is likely to harbor rats, vermin, or other pests must be taken care of. This has not been done for many years and creates a fire hazard to dozens of houses in the area, especially during this time of year. Number three, the city to purchase the open space and develop the property into a maintained open space like it shows in the general plan, which will include picnic areas, trails, and maintained open space. And finally, let the voice of the majority of property owners in the area bring this issue to rest, and let the actual residents and the city work together in making the open space beautiful and welcoming to all. And I'll pass a copy of this to you.
Thank you. Gene Peasley.
Jean Peasley, 10147 North Oak Road West. I want to thank you again for all of your sacrifice and all that you do for us. And I want to just say that every single one of us moved here to Cedar Hills. We chose to live here because of the view, the openness, a place for the children to play and be creative outside of really good parks and play equipment. This is some space that the kids can really have fun. However, now it's posted no trespassing, so the kids really can't play there anymore. But I'd really like you to consider keeping it open. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, the handwriting is a little swirly for me. Melissa.
It's Melissa Grant, and I live on 10196 Oak Court, so I'm part of that horseshoe. And so not initially would we be impacted, but we'd be greatly impacted because our backyard backs right up into the open space. So we would be greatly impacted by any changes in the zoning laws. My family moved to Cedar Hills 27 years ago. So we've also, as Tyler, we're neighbors to Tyler's parents, and I agree with my husband, and I agree with everything that's been said so far about the open space. My only point to speak is that I just want you to know our opinion is that we greatly desire to maintain the open space because of the beauty and the naturalness of the area. It is one of the reasons why we bought our home there. We have always known that it was meant to be open space, and we have always been amongst the battle of trying to maintain it to be open space. The person who purchased it has never, in our years that we've lived there, he maintained the area maybe 1 or 2 years, and it hasn't been maintained behind our yard since, and we've been there 27 years. I'd like to just address just 3 points. The purpose of the open space has always been zoned as open space, and when the other parks have been developed, the parks were developed first, then came the houses. In our area, the houses came first over the open space. There has not been any change in that. That's why we all bought our houses and the houses were there. The stability would be greatly impacted, particularly where our house is. It's hill. When the houses that were built on the road above us, we were impacted at that point with runoffs and floodings and things like that, and we're a little bit concerned about those issues again with any sort of development behind our home, because we had had issues before when the houses were built above us. And also, just in the third point being that just the beauty It increases the imagination for our kids. We have had five children that we've raised. It's been open to the public. People enjoy the backness of the area and the natural state. Their imaginations fly with the forts and things that they've been able to do. And I think I think we can work together, but we do not need houses and residential areas behind our house and in that area. We like to maintain the open space because that's what the original plan was for over 40 years, for 27 years. We've still been dealing with this issue, and we would like it again to come to an end. We love it, and that's why we're here in Cedar Hills, is because of the natural beauty of Cedar Hills, and we haven't chosen to move from it because of that. Thank you for your time.
Steve Kessler.
Thank you. A little slower to review my notes. My name is Steve Kessler. I live at 4186 West Sage Road. The actual unit itself, or the division, doesn't affect me directly. However, ultimately, I believe it will. In as much as I have been here since the early 90s, and I've seen this issue before from Mr. Parsons, where he was going to put 8 lots in that other section. I fought against that. Didn't like it, don't want it. When I first moved here, Oak Road North was not there. And I was assured, like everybody else at that time, oh, they're not going to build there. I talked with Lillian Hayes, who owned all this property, you know, great lady. She says, Steve, go find an endangered species and put it up there, will you? You know, so my kids can't sell. I didn't do that. I would have liked to, but didn't. But that issue of the open space there has always been basically guaranteed. But so was the park, you know, like 4 houses down on Sage. There was supposed to be a park there. And I wanted all this to be gravel pit. And when I first moved here, I thought, okay, yeah, that's a thought. How are they going to build up there? Same way they build on the east side of the road, where you got, you know, on backfield, where you've got basement floors sinking 6 inches because of the building on the backfield. I'm an inspector. I've inspected many homes, and I've seen these things upright and personal all the time because of the building on the backfield that has happened. There's been a lot of backfill put back in that other open space down behind my house. There's the public, utility right-of-ways right on my backyard. And I know to address the public utilities for this use over here is going to affect me. Everything else should affect me in regards to everything else that currently remains there. Like I say, I've seen 2 fires there. I've seen 1 flood there where I had to funnel water down through my house and Frederickson's house and in the 100-year storm. I like the area back there. I maintain my section with permission from Mr. Parsons and the current owner. That I put a little green space. I till it up and put pumpkins there because I have a wood house. And just like last night, I'm watering my back lawn. I'm watering the back hill because I don't want my house to burn down. Happens every year. There's been 2 fairly good fires there. You know, and I would like it maintained. I don't mind maintaining my section. It's not that big of a hassle. However, once you rezone that and open that up, the potential does exist in my mind, like Mr. Parson wanted, to have 8 more homes in that area. And I look at the cost for the infrastructure of that. I look at the effect on my property of that. And if somebody's going to take that, my house value is going to go down $30,000, $40,000. Who's going to compensate me for that? I would suggest that you table this issue for the present time. Contact the city attorney and find out how much it's going to cost you. And figure out, you know, ultimately what's going to happen to that section and end it. I know the meetings that I was at back in 93, May 12th, 93, June 9th, 93, Planning Commission, July 7th, 94, et cetera, et cetera. I would hope you guys review those minutes of those meetings and see what was done, because I don't believe there was any final outcome on that. I think there needs to be one. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Brantley.
Good Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Steve Brantley. I am affiliated with the firm of Petty & Associates in Sandy. We represent Mr. Parsons. Mr. Parsons is aging greatly and is having issues with dementia, so he's not able to be here. And from what I understand anyway, in the past, Mr. Parsons may have been a little abrasive and difficult to deal with. So it's probably just as well that he's not here. And I feel a little bit like David and Goliath, because as far as I can tell, it's me and nobody else agrees with us. So that's but a couple of points that I feel need to be brought up. One is the fact of the matter is this property is a private property. This property is not owned by the city. The city, in order to keep a designation such as this, in order to not do it a illegal taking of the property, would have to compensate Mr. Parsons for the property. We are in a situation where a government entity is effectively taking, and as a result of that, something needs to be resolved, something needs to give. Mr. Parsons is not unwilling to work things out with neighbors. As was mentioned before, back as far as 93 and 94, this issue was investigated, and it was determined that there is a sufficient building envelope that it could be built upon. I think that's probably a given at this point. So the real issue then becomes private property rights. And in this case, while I understand a lot of the neighbors would like to keep the property open, the fact of the matter is, if the shoe were on the other foot, it might be a different feeling. In addition, Mr. Parsons is the one that pays the taxes on the property. Mr. Parsons is the one that has liability for trespassers on the property.
He doesn't maintain it.
I'm sorry?
He does not maintain it.
Okay. And in addition, there's no reason that the parties couldn't come together and work something out with the balance of the property to leave that part in open space. We're not unwilling to consider that, but we haven't had anybody come to Mr. Parsons, either from citizens, neighbors, or the city, wanting to resolve that in a way that works for both parties. It seems to be an either-or situation. I don't believe it has to be an either-or situation. But by removing the designation, then the property is, in effect, usable again. And as it sits right now, it's mostly just weeds and rocks. It's on the side of a hill, kind of. If a home is built on that, it would still have to comply with all the building codes. It would still have to put together the utilities in it, just like any other home in that subdivision. There is a need to, there is a need to cooperate. We would like to do that. Thank you.
It was zoning for open space.
We remind the audience that they have an opportunity to sign up and speak. We want to stay respectful.
You don't know what he's going to say until he speaks. Well, how are we going to sign up before him? Come on.
All right, Jeff. Starts with an L.
L? That's me.
Lindstrom.
I got an L here today. I can use another one name. My name's Jeff Lindstrom, 10469 North Mesquite. I grew up about 2 miles south of here in Manila, so this was the Turkey Ranch when I was a kid. We did chase rabbits up here. But I lived on Oak Road West for about 35 years before I moved over to Mesquite. When I moved here in 76, Cedar Hills is a subdivision of the county, which you never hear of anymore. The agreement with the county was, and the developer, Cedar Hills Development Corporation, was that once there were 100 residents, it would incorporate into a town, which I was probably in the first 20 people that moved into Cedar Hills. We woke up one day and we were a town. So everybody had a job. I was on the planning commission for about most of the 80s. So I was involved where you're sitting during the time a lot of this initiated and developed. And what the odd thing is, what you're seeing a little bit of now, is there anybody here that doesn't like open space? There's nobody. The question is public versus private. And maybe address that just a little bit. I know as in a city official, you want to balance the rights of them versus the property owners. And maybe what I could suggest is another option. Historically, and this is not the first time I've spoken in a meeting like this. This has happened quite a few times. Is there are some other options. Like right now, is portrayed that the ground is basically worthless because they can't build or do anything on it. Right now, when I moved here or built the house on Oak Road West, there was another piece over there on the east side of Oak Road. I purchased it and I combined it with my existing lot where I lived. So what I did was I didn't build on it. I maintained it as open space. And if you go down to the Stake Center, that gazebo on the hill used to be open space. That's an example of what can happen with a private ownership that's designated as open space. It doesn't have to be weeds. And there is some value there inherently in the piece of property. And I, in my opinion, you're not depriving a property owner of his use or value in the property just for the fact that it's designated as open space and those are the restrictions placed on it. There's also some questions about how it got to be where it is. If some of you want to talk later on, I'll try and tell you what I remember. Thanks.
Thank you. Eric Richardson.
Good evening, Commissioners, Councilwoman, staff. We've been here 17 years
this week. Please state your name and address.
Yes, I will. We've been here 17 years this week, and we currently live at 4275 Sandwood. My name's Eric Richardson. And I feel a little bad for you because you have to look at me, and I get to look out there. And what a view. This is a great facility. And one of the things about here is I can see lots of open space on the hillside. So that's why I'm here, just like everyone else. You know, if we were talking about what we should be doing here, I think there's a couple principles to keep in mind. First of all, the city's granted pretty broad powers on what to do on legislative issues. And in this case, this parcel has always been open space. It's been open space from day one. And that's never changed. And there's been numerous actions on this over the years, but it's always been open space. And, you know, I wish that we had Kim Holland Drake or Rodney Despain or some of the staff members who have been here from the beginning here tonight. They could expand on it. I'm really happy to see this room full of people who have been on the Planning Commission, been on the City Council, served. And any of us are happy to share our experience too. But I think that's the thing is this property has never been vested with developmental rights. From day one, it was an exaction. And maybe we can even think about what that must have meant when 40 years ago, when the edge of the city was across the street and there's in this open space, the developer had to set aside and it was an exaction in the city that would be open space then. So if it was important 40 years ago, then it's certainly important now. Now, I know that Mr. Parsons is a private owner of it, but you know, if we talk about his taxes, you know, we just pulled it up here. Last year he paid $0 in taxes. The year before it's $9. Now that's not even $9 to the city, that's $9 overall. So, you know, the city probably got enough for a big gulp or something out of that. But the point is that there are no property developmental rights vested in it. It's always been open space, and many of us value that. And we need more open space in the city. We can't get rid of it. And we have a deficiency now, so we need to keep at that. I think the final thing that I would say is that this comes up every few years, and we probably just need to resolve it. A few years ago, we talked about options with Mr. Parsons. We talked about him gifting it to the city, getting a huge tax write-off worth much more than the $9 that he's paying in taxes every year. We talked about condemning it. Those options should be considered. You know, the only reason why a private person owns public open space is because they're hoping to make a killing. And it was a little bit of speculation on his part 40 years ago. And, you know, he deserves a little bit of return on his $500 investment, but he doesn't deserve to have this windfall of millions of dollars at the detriment of many residents of our city from many different neighborhoods who all have made decisions based off of that platted open space that has been consistent for 40 years now. So I hope that you'll take that action tonight to recommend to the City Council denial of the rezone, that you'll take strong action on that, and that in that denial that you'll actually also encourage them to proceed forward with some sort of termination of this ongoing 40-year-long drama of why it's there, and let's either get it deeded over the city as a gift so it gets the nice tax write-off, he'll get a nice return on his money for doing that, or the city buys it for what it's worth, which is virtually nothing since there's no development rights, or that we do something to resolve this and make everyone happy. And I think that's in your hands tonight, you know, that can be done, and so I encourage you to do that. Thank you so much.
Brooke Richardson.
Yeah. My name is Brooke Richardson. I live at 4275 West End Wood Drive. I'm in favor of open space, and that's all I have.
Thank you. J.D. Brisk.
J.D. Brisk, 4034 West, Oak Road North, near Cedar Hills. Just two brief things. Much of what I want to say has already been covered. The issue of open space was open space when they purchased it, and we've never denied them the legal use of that open space for which they purposed. But it is, at the end of the day, it was open space. They knew what it was when they bought it. Secondly, Cedar Hills is a political hotbed ever since I moved here, as you well know. Please take into account the not only the rights of the individual, but the rights of several other hundred other property owners that this will affect. Keep in mind the wishes of these registered voters. Thank you.
Brian Scott.
Sorry, that was a good
fit. Got it. Rodney Price.
My name is Rodney Price. I live on 4152 West Oak Road North. We love it here. We absolutely adore Cedar Hills. And I think we shared that with you on the council. Otherwise, you wouldn't have signed up for this job. I do feel that it's important to recognize that the people that have spoken here today have invested and put their roots down here. We love it here. We want it to be a great place to live. We are thrilled with the spaces and the parks, and love them and want to preserve them. Please consider that the people that live here and are raising families here have rights too. That'll close with that.
R.L. Pay.
Going on
with people. Okay, thank you. Lisa Pay.
I think it's been well covered. Thank you.
All right, nearly to the end. Chris
Warner.
Yeah.
I agree with everything else said other than respectfully, Mr. Bradley, I don't agree with you, but everybody else, I appreciate your eloquence and succinctness.
And Rick Stewart.
He's the one who spoke on the
on the other. Got it. Okay, thank you. Are we good? Okay, we'll close that portion of the meeting. Public hearing is now closed. Move on to the scheduled items. First being approval of the minutes from the March 28th, 2017 and the April 25th, 2017 Planning Commission meetings. Thank you. And before we get to that, I do need to acknowledge each member of the commission that's here tonight will be a voting member. Got it. Do we have any comments or discussion on the notes?
On the minutes.
On the minutes.
No.
No discussion.
No discussion. I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the minutes from the March 28th, 2017 and April 25th, 2017 Planning Commission meetings.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Can we identify voting members for tonight?
You already did.
You did? Okay, good.
Should I identify them by name? Okay. Lorianne Spear.
Brian Miller.
What?
Brian Miller.
I always forget your first name, Brian. Thank you. And?
Jared Anderson.
Jared Anderson. And me, John Dredge. All right. We'll go on to the second scheduled item, review or recommendation on the amendments to the City Code, Title 10, Chapter 3, regarding the rezoning of certain portions of the area currently in the public PF facility zone to RA 11,000 residential zone and to amend the official zone map to reflect zone changes. Chandler.
All right. Thank you all for being here. So first of all, I want to go over a couple of things just for your history. Let's talk about the history of the parcel to begin with. The parcel is part of the original development for Cedar Hills, and it was actually approved by the county commission. Cedar Hills wasn't incorporated as a municipality when this subdivision was approved. The developer at the time was... I'm going to test my brain here.
Associated Industrial Developers.
Yes, thank you. And so they were the ones that recorded the plat. They worked with the county, and that was recorded in 1976 with the lot in question, Lot 26, Plat I, as open space. And that has remained open space over the years. The original developer was, it's always been held in private hands, and that's a unique portion, that's a unique part of this open space versus other open space that the city owns. When the Cedars was developed here, you had, I think it was about 725 units that were clustered in, and the golf course was dedicated to the city as open space. So we have this open space surrounding the Cedars here. Up on the hillside, there's another 100 acres there that's open space that the city owns. Currently, when a development comes in, and because we're a municipality now, certain requirements in our code require that the developer dedicate a certain portion of the development to the city as open space. It's typically about 30%, especially if it's on the hillside. But in this case, it was in 1976, and the city was not incorporated, so there's not a municipality to dedicate the open space to. Now, had there been a city, I don't know what would have happened. But nonetheless, this piece has changed hands a few times, I want to say three or four times, most recently in the early 90s when Mr. Parsons purchased it on a quitclaim deed.
Can I ask you, Chandler, I need to know more about those transfers. How did that happen?
How does it happen?
Was it a tax sale? Did the original developer not pay the taxes?
That's my understanding.
How Mr. Parsons picked it up? Was that a tax sale?
Maybe. That's what I heard, and I haven't seen anything to disprove that or say otherwise. I really don't know.
Do you know that, counsel?
As far as I know, Mr. Parsons bought that from another individual who bought it as tax.
I think originally, there in 1983, when it left the developer's hands, it was at a tax sale, but Mr. Parsons purchased it by quitclaim deed in 1993, something like that, at which point he approached the city for some development rights on the property. Now, we had to do a real deep dive into our minutes to find some of this stuff. You saw how, and we went through a few boxes of minutes to find, try to find anything. We've been trying to digitize our minutes, but these were type of typewriters, and they're not searchable, and some of them aren't digital yet. But you see, we found some minutes, but it's hard to find when you're searching for Oak Road open space, and the only way it's noticed is Lot 26 and 19. So it's kind of hard to find. But I hope you had the chance to read the past minutes. I'm not going to contend that those minutes are all-inclusive of every time it's come before the City Council and the Planning Commission. I wouldn't dare say that, but... this does, I think, give you a snapshot of the discussions that would have been had at the time. And one other thing of note is that some of the people that were here 20 years ago, 25 years ago, talking about the open space are in this room tonight. So Jeff Lindstrom was one of them. Priscilla Leek was another one. They know a lot about this parcel as well.
Can I ask you one more question?
Yes, please.
Continue. Has the configuration of that lot ever changed since it was originally platted?
No. That's a history of the lot. Is there any questions on kind of a background on how we got to this point? It's always remained open space, and I hope you had a chance to read those minutes. So I think they were they're insightful. Now, with that, this application represents due process on the landowner's. It's his property right. To make application. This isn't something that was generated by the city. It was generated by a landowner. Mr. Brantley came into my office, and we met about the parcel. And as a landowner, he's able to make application based on our fee schedule, and he paid the money that allowed the city to send notification to the residents, which you received in the mail. So that's his landowner. That's his right as a landowner. And there is a need for openness, and I think the city's done a good job of letting people know what is happening, which is why we have, I think, about 70 people in the audience tonight, which is good. And then one other thing I want to touch on is the powers and duties of a city. And Eric Richardson touched on this, and I'm going to read from Utah State Code. It's from it's referred to as LUDMA. It's Land Use Development Management Act. It's 10-9A-102. And so forgive me, this is code, so bear with me. It says, municipalities may enact all ordinances, resolutions, and rules, and may enter into other forms of land use controls and development agreements that they consider necessary or appropriate for the use and development of land within the municipality, including ordinances, resolutions, rules, restrictive covenants, easements, and development agreements governing uses, density, open spaces, structures, building. Goes on to say, name a few things. But and balance of the foregoing purposes with a landowner's private property interests, height and location of vegetation, trees, and landscaping unless expressly prohibited by law. The municipality's legislative body is granted authority to make land use decisions within the city, which gives the city council and planning commission the ability to make recommendations on land use changes, zoning changes, changing densities. So that is a power that's granted to the planning commission and making a recommendation to the city council. Further, state code 10-9A-505 states that a legislative body may divide the territory over which it has jurisdiction into zoning districts of a number, shape, and area that it considers appropriate to carry out the purposes of this chapter, meaning the land use chapter. So there is authority that's been granted to the city to govern the land within the city. Are there any questions on that? I'm going to kind of touch on a number of the issues here before we get into a discussion. Okay. So let's talk about the recommendation, and it's poorly worded, and I apologize because I really try to state to make a very neutral recommendation, and this one didn't come out very well. But really, the Planning Commission, my recommendation to the Planning Commission is to make some recommendation to the City Council. That could be a positive recommendation, it could be a negative recommendation. You have three options of what you can do tonight. There's 7 members of the Planning Commission, only 4 of them are here tonight. But you have 3 options, like I said. You can make a recommendation for approval to the City Council, you can make a recommendation of denial to the City Council, or you can table for further discussion. So those are your 3 options. Then last, so what happens? If there's a recommendation for approval or a recommendation for denial, it will go to the City Council with that recommendation. And then the City Council would be the ultimate land use authority and make the final decision. Another portion of this is that there is open space on it. It's not enough to just move the open space back into the R1 11,000 zone. You have to vacate the open space, which means that plat I has to be amended to show buildable lots. Now that happens later. I'm going to throw out a hypothetical here, so just play with me. So let's say that you make a positive recommendation to the City Council. The City Council then vacates the open space and moves the property back into the R1 11,000. That triggers, the owner would have to then go through the subdivision process. Because right now he's not showing buildable lots. He's not showing any engineering. You're not approving a subdivision. If he were to come in and say, I want to put 3 lots on this, or 2 lots, he would have to show those lots, and he'd have to show the engineering how he's going to service those lots. Now the city would service those lots, so we'd have to meet with the fire marshal and talk about how does a fire engine get in here and address the residents' concerns. It would trigger the subdivision process. Now, if there's a denial, it still goes to the planning committee, it still goes to the city council, and they can make an approval or a denial at that point, which either is a denial and it's done, or it's and then the landowner would have to pursue other options, or the city council would approve it and go with the subdivision process. So you're not approving a building lot tonight, if that makes sense.
Why don't you expand on that process? So what happens next? How do you amend the plat?
Yeah. Well, you would have to, well, right now it's plat I, and you would have to take that open space, and probably I would probably suggest to just take that open space and create an amended plat I with it.
But who would have to sign off on that amended plat?
The Planning Commission and the City Council.
So we go right back to the same process, basically.
Wait, but you would be doing it, you'd be creating a subdivision at that point. So, to answer your question?
It does.
Okay. Let me just say, approving it or denying it just kicks off the next process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you speak to the public facility designation?
Yes.
That seems to be a bit confusing and maybe even a misnomer.
A few residents mentioned the general plan, and they're right. This has been in the general plan as a park. It's been in the capital improvements plan as a park. Now, the unique thing about this land is that the city does not own the land, but they do want to put a park on it at some point. So let's talk about the public facility zone. It's in Title 10, Chapter 4, J, I believe. Yeah, Jay. So the legislative intent of the public facility zone is established to provide areas for the location and establishment of facilities owned and maintained by public and quasi-public entities and that utilize relatively large areas of land. We have open space that's not in the public facility zone. So if you were to go up this hill, these townhomes just east of us here, the city owns, if you look at a map of the city owns about 100 acres going up the hillside there. That's open space. But it's not in the public facility zone other than where the actual physical water tanks are. There's infrastructure there, and that makes it a public facility. But the remaining portion is just open space hillside. That doesn't mean it has development rights. It doesn't. It's open space. Now, this is in the public facility zone. We moved it into the public facility zone because it is designated to have a park on it at some point, so it would be a public facility.
Can I ask a clear plan?
Yeah, I believe it was like 2020. However, the issue is, and it's been raised here, is we don't own the land.
Understood.
So it would require the city working in conjunction with Mr. Parsons and the other gentleman that owns the other parcel, Mr. Hansen, on acquiring the land in some way. So further, the public facility zone says, it is the intent of this zone district to provide for effective regulation of the placement and construction of major public systems and facilities within the city in order to ensure that said facilities will be consistent with the purposes of the general plan and be located, constructed, and maintained in a manner that will further the interest of the city and its residents and facilitate Utah code. So going back to the general plan states that Cedar Hills and the land use element, which is a required element that the state makes the city have, recognize the importance of the natural environment and open space in the community. Many of the goals and objectives found in this element reflect the community's desire to protect the environment and provide open space areas for the use and enjoyment of the residents. So open space has always been very important to the city. This is a general plan that was adopted in 1995. Ideally, you update your general plan every few years, but I think that that statement that was written, although it was over 20 years ago, still highly relevant today. I don't think that's changed. I think open space still is a very important. Someone mentioned the survey that was conducted with the general plan, and recreation open space was the highest priority. And I think that in our community, with a lot of young families, I think that that still is a high priority for the city. So, given this information, what questions can I answer for you?
When did that designation change?
Which designation?
When did it become public facility?
2015. 2015, we moved a number of pieces in that were. We had a number of parks that were in the zones where their surrounding areas are. So, for example, there's Doral Park, which is a little pocket park that's on the hillside zone. It was in the hillside zone, but it's a public facility. So, we moved a lot of these. Parks and what were intended for public use into the public facility zone.
Did Mr. Parson object to that?
We received no objection, no.
I was going to say he was notified.
He would have been notified as everyone else was.
And is his the only property, the public facility property that's privately owned?
No. The Harvey piece is privately held, and that is in the public facility zone as well, as well as the other side of the Oak Road piece, Mr. Hansen's. Yeah, so I can think of three.
Has this property been addressed since the 93-94 hearings?
I'm going to assume it has, but I didn't have time to go through about 10 boxes of bank boxes of paper to find it. I was happy to find the minutes that I did, but I'm going to assume it has. I don't believe it's been discussed in the city in this fashion since 2010.
So this hearing here tonight was initiated by Mr. Parsons approaching the city.
Mr. Parsons via
representative
approaching the city.
Okay. And you stated that it's been the city's plan, long-term plan, to eventually obtain this parcel and some mechanism and turn it into a park. Has this just kind of been on the back burner? Was this just kind of out there until it was approached?
It's been on the back burner. It hasn't. Developing other parks has been at the forefront of the city's plans, as they've been higher up on the list of priorities, and they've been they're scheduled for development sooner than the Oak Road piece. So, for example, Bay Hill Park was scheduled for development in fiscal year 2017 or 2016. Originally, it was scheduled, I think, a few years prior to that, but the downturn in the economy forced us to delay that. So when these other parks, when we were starting to be able to develop some of these other parks and these other areas in the public facility zone, those took priority over something that was 5 years further down the road.
So as far as you're aware, the city hasn't reached out and tried to obtain this property?
I've never reached out to Mr. Parsons or Mr. Hansen to obtain the property. I've been told others have. I haven't seen any evidence to suggest what those conversations may have been like, but I'm sure it's happened.
Mr. Brantley, do you know of anyone who's reached out to Mr. Parsons?
I'm not aware of anyone.
Okay.
I haven't heard of any discussions. I've been with the city for 7 years. I haven't been a part of any discussions. Is there?
Jane Peasley, I served on the town council back then. And Roger Despain, and was the term said that was designated open space, never could be developed or built upon. Residential, and it's in the
minutes. Do you remember what year that was?
Yes, I have it right here.
Are these the minutes that are part of the packet?
No, I haven't. I think I ran out of my 3 minutes. Rodney Spain comes to me and says that. Yeah, I highlighted his part. He said, the lot is open space. Our ordinance states that this is not. This is then not.
Yeah. I read this, and it does say that it was intended to. It ends with saying that it was intended to be dedicated to the town. That never happened. Like I said, when this lot was designated as open space, Cedar Hills did not exist. But given that, it does not take away the city's legislative authority to control land use within the city. So although it is open space, decisions can be made to overturn that.
And the code that you referenced, Title 10, 9A102, states that the municipalities and then whether that be the council or the commission, however it's designated, may enact all ordinances and resolutions, basically given the discretion that they consider necessary or appropriate.
Yeah, and I do think that looking at the general plan in this case is very important. I think it's the original intent of the subdivision is also very important.
What do you mean by that last part?
Looking at the original intent of the subdivision?
Yes.
Well, the original intent of the subdivision was that this be an open space. That was what it was recorded as in 1976, and it's remained as such for 41 years. So there wasn't ever a time when this was a buildable lot. So the application is to create a buildable lot eventually on the parcel. However many that is, I don't know at this time because that's not what you're approving right now. Or denying, sorry, let me just be clear on that. What you're approving right now is for them to begin the process eventually of making that application.
Well, really, we're not approving anything.
You're making a recommendation, correct.
And I think that's important for everyone to understand.
Correct, yes.
What we do tonight ultimately doesn't matter because the city council is going to make their own decision. Mm-hmm. So.
And going forward, as far as a process, and I met with a number of residents, and I appreciate the time that you guys have spent on this issue. You will receive another notice in the mail when that goes before the planning, before it goes before the city council. So you will be made aware when that decision is made.
We'll be there.
Okay. I have another question.
Yes.
Has there ever been an intent by the city to purchase the land from Mr. Parsons?
Yes.
I'm sure there has. I've never been privy to such discussions. I don't know what those discussions were. The issue there is...
Yes, we did.
Mr. Erickson.
But you are representing the city.
I was representing the city.
Yes.
Okay. I'm both as a council member and we did again when I was the mayor. So there's been multiple attempts to try and purchase that or to try and work out a donation of it to the city where he can get a substantial tax deduction. We've tried many times over here. So
that's what I'm wondering. Was he did he object to deeding it over in exchange for a tax break? But he would rather sell it to the city.
At that point in time, it always broke down because he wanted to sell it at a valuation based off of them being developmental lots.
Which it's not.
What an entitled piece of ground was with developmental rights. And of course, we valued it because there's no developmental rights as something without any developmental rights as open space. And so there's a big gap in the valuation that way. And so, what's the value of open space? Well, if you go onto the city's, on the county's web page and you look at what the county values that, well, this year he paid $0 in taxes because they value it as zero. Last year he paid $9 in county taxes because they valued it at a tax valuation that gets $9. So I think this whole room is full of people that would love to pay $9 per year in property taxes. That's where we're at. So, there's been attempts. They have never turned out, but that doesn't change the dynamic of what it is. It's open space without
Mr. Brantley.
Just one thing too. As we went to residents, we did try to purchase the property from the gentleman about 25 years. We've been living here for 2 years. We tried to approach him and buy the property behind our house. He wanted to parcel off each individual section behind the houses that were directly affected. And again, the evaluation was so extreme for about 20-foot pieces of property, we couldn't afford it. We were brand new married. How can we afford $1,500 for a 20-foot area behind our house? And he wanted that from all the neighbors. From that. So, of course, we couldn't come to any agreement, but we tried many times to be reasonable with this gentleman in purchasing the property behind our home.
Does Mr. Brantley have a response?
The property right next to me, and right after he bought it, within a year or two, because I was building my home right there, and he said, I'll sell this to you for $80,000. $80,000 for a 20-foot wide piece of nothing. Piece of ground. I mean, it's unrealistic the price that he is trying to sell it for. But I think if it was research and found a real market value for what it is, we could buy it and we could stipulate that it's going to remain open space. So there'll be no permanent structures put on that. We have talked as residents right around there. That's the place right here. That we would volunteer to keep that weeds down, keep it presentable, put a few park benches up, plant a few trees. We're not asking the city to really invest, just keep it the way it is. And to evaluate the property for what it is, what I'm worried about is that this goes through, it's going to go from zero to $200,000, which puts it out of reach of the city. Getting it back, or any of us that are contingent in that neighborhood of mine. But if there was a reasonable price and you would make it a handsome profit, that we would buy that.
Okay. Can we have maybe a response from Mr. Parsons' representative?
Let me just say that the thing that you have to remember is, again, it is still private property. It's the same as if you did to any other neighbor and asked to buy it under their property. If they don't want to sell it, they give you a price that you don't want to pay. And that's kind of what's happened. But what he's looking at this point is no longer just holding out. He wants to have a house built on the buildable area and then to work things out with the remaining property that hasn't been taken care of. That village down, and it could be a little notice if they're doing a mortgage together. So just keep in mind, he's very old. He's probably on his deathbed at this point. He's got dementia issues. There are things he needs to put to bed, just for the sake of his posterity. This is one of the reasons. So we're not trying to deprive the neighbors.
So Mr. Brendan,
this isn't an open forum right now. I apologize, but we've let this get out of hand.
Let's keep responses to questions, specific question. If somebody's been asked specifically a question.
So, let's talk about the buildable area there, because unbeknownst to me, the original public hearing sign was posted on Mr. Lane's property and not the property adjacent to it, so we had to move the sign. There's two lots there. I don't know how many of you had the opportunity to drive by the property in question. There's a lot on the corner that Mr. Lane owns, correct? And that is a buildable lot because it's just a vacant lot from the original subdivision. South of that is the piece in question, and it's flatter than the remaining part of the parcel, and in theory could be a buildable lot, but like I said, it'd have to go through the subdivision process. Now, I just did some simple math on Google today, and it would be about a 0.4 size, about 0.4 of an acre, that lot. Should it just kind of between lots 4 and 18, just kind of make a buildable parcel, which would not be the largest lot in the lot in the subdivision, not the smallest. Fit in.
Right. No.
It just fit in. So that's where you are.
And you're talking about one lot.
That'd be one lot. In the R1 11,000 zone, you'd have to have a minimum of 11,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. And so to get that, you would really be pressed to try to get two lots there. It's just, I don't know how it works.
Okay.
Based on the topography.
Based on my limited messing with the topography, yeah. The topography, I walked back there and looked at it, and it is challenging once it gets in between the two homes. It's very steep. And my concerns, if there ever were a development there, would be access for public safety vehicles, getting utilities there. It would just be a very difficult piece to develop. I don't think anything's impossible, but it's very difficult.
Additional questions from the commission?
I don't.
I do have a kind of a, I heard conflicting views from these residents here. In that, you know, there was Mr. Gardner that says this is not maintained, there's vermin, there's a problem with this as it is. And then I heard other people say this should maintain exactly as it is, pristine, and this. We want our children be able to play back there. I'm thinking if it's private property, it's private property, and you can't go back. But I understand the idea of an open space isn't so that it's accessible for playing in right at this, as it's designated right now. It's not a park. So I'm just, you know, is it enforced? How is this maintained? You know, do they have to maintain this as it is right now? Or is it...
You know, the only maintenance I've seen on it is about a 5-foot swath of weed whacking from
the sidewalk.
End of sidewalk to into the property.
All right.
That's about it.
Who did that?
I believe the city's been doing that. You'll see our crews out there doing it.
I'm just saying I'm hearing conflicting, you know, values. Which are we going to value? Clean it up or maintain it as it is? So that's just a comment.
And an additional point of clarification is that the issue presented before this body tonight is a recommendation for changing the zoning. And so while we've heard a lot in regards to maintenance and what happens on the lot and what's currently happening on the lot, what we would like to see happen with the lot is not actually anything that we're considering and making a recommendation, positive or negative, on today. It's only the change in zoning. So we do appreciate those comments. However, we're not going to be deciding or really discussing anything in that aspect.
If I could throw in one more thing to consider. When the application came in, we began working with our attorney on this issue because it's not a cut and dry issue. I really don't think it is. And the issue is if it remains a public facility zone, does it constitute a taking of private property rights? And our initial analysis says no. It may not be the it may not be what the private property owner wants to do with the property, but based on case law, it's only considered a taking if the regulations deprive the property of all economic benefit. So is in the public facility zone, are there things that can happen on the property that are of economic benefit to the private property owner? In the public facility zone, there are a few permitted uses. Now, you don't see them on private property too often, but they do occur. But they are cemeteries, some parks, schools, water reservoirs, municipal buildings. It's not what people go out and buy property and envision doing with it, but it is something. So our initial analysis says that it's not a taking.
Two kind of comment questions. First yeah. one is, and I think this has been made clear, he purchased the property with it zoned as public facility.
No, it was zoned. I don't know what the original zoning was because it was in the county. It was platted as open space. That's what it was. That's the best word to use. It's always been designated open space on the plat.
Okay, I understand that. I'm trying to determine at the point at which he purchased
at the point at which he purchased it, I would say that it was probably in the R1 10,000 zone, which was then changed to the R1 11,000 zone when the general plan was adopted in 1995. This was purchased in 1993. So it was open space.
Open space.
It was still open space within that zone. It's always been open space.
If it is, and then this is a question for you, judgment call, you may not be able to answer.
Oh, no.
Sorry, Chandler. If it is rezoned, and then the city were to desire to purchase it for a park, with the rezoning of that, moving it from public facilities, open space, to...
Eric Richardson already touched on this. And I 100% agree with what he said. In the past, if we were to negotiate it, I'm sure that any owner of the property would have wanted top dollar for the parcel in question, whether it's Mr. Hansen or Mr. Parsons. Fact of the matter is, it is not a piece of land with developable rights, and so it does change the value on it.
Yeah.
And that's the value that it was purchased with. That hasn't changed.
In essence, this could be viewed as undoing what happened in 2015.
It's exactly what it was doing.
Which in my mind is problematic. To have a public facility designation on private property doesn't make sense to me.
True. And this is where the intent of the general plan, I think, comes in, is what is the intent of that parcel?
Well, that's not to say that it shouldn't be open.
Yes.
That's just saying I have personally a problem yeah. with it being designated as a public facility mm-hmm. when it's owned privately.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That'd be no different than going to the vacant lot next to my house and designating it as a public facility. It doesn't make any sense.
It would be different if that vacant lot had, does that vacant lot have buildable rights?
Well, it's within the discretion of the code, though.
It is.
Same decision. So.
But that's the issue.
Right, different history, but ultimately the same legal question.
Yeah.
Good. Further discussion?
I would comment maybe not quite, because it was purchased. He purchased it knowing it was designated open space.
Right.
Right, but that's not to say anything about open space versus non-open space. It's just its zoning designation, which is
right.
The very narrow question we're being asked to make a recommendation on.
You could change this into the R1 11,000 zone, but it still doesn't make it a buildable lot.
Right. He still has to go through all of the amendment process that you described. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
To demonstrate that he still has to go through a lot of hoops to get there.
But if you do that in conjunction with, we recommend that the city council move this into the R1 11,000 zone and vacate the open space, it does change things.
Yeah. Well, that second part is not. Yeah. Okay. That's not my. That's not what I was suggesting.
So there's in the motion. There are really two recommendations if you read it. There's a recommendation on changing the zoning and a recommendation to the council on vacating the open space.
Because that's what you applied for.
Yeah.
So you could do one or the other or both.
Yeah.
Or not.
Doing one without the other may not achieve any dreams here, though.
So I have one comment to make to the commission, and this is not with the intent that we push something off that we should not, but we are missing our chair and vice chair this evening, who might have pertinent input on this matter. I did not receive any emails to that effect. Did any of you?
Not for this issue.
Not yet. Not on this issue. Another issue.
I don't think it's fair to those who are present to kick this down the road.
And I'm not going to disagree with you. I will entertain a motion.
From my perspective, I kind of like the idea of tabling it because I would like some more time to look at the legal side of it. I know it's not a popular issue, but I think this is a decision that needs to be made correctly.
We don't have any documents or anything from the city attorney on this.
So is this on the taking issue? Is that your...
Yeah, that's something I want to explore a little bit more before we get too far ahead. That's my personal recommendation to staff. I think that, given the nature of this, I think that it is important to get it right. It's been open space for 40 years. It's just me saying I don't know that another month is going to hurt it.
But this decision isn't going to result in a legal challenge to the taking issue. That's going to be
no. It would be the city council's. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
At least I believe it would, because that's where the ultimate yes no comes.
Yeah. No one's gonna appeal this decision tonight.
No.
Questioners?
Well, I will move that we table this issue until we can have more information. It's not seconded. That I understand, but. I move that we recommend that we table this issue, the proposed changes to the official zoning, Cedar Hills zoning map, amending the portions of the public facility zone, and tabling the decision whether or not to vacate the open space provision in the Cedar Hills subdivision, Plat I, Lot 26.
Do I have a second?
Discussion.
Usually second, then get the discussion.
Right.
Or it dies.
Discussion. Go ahead.
I have my thoughts and on where I see myself going, but I'm trying to balance being sensitive to everybody that's been here tonight, and I thank everybody for their attendance and those that spoke. And we have received those statements, those ones that were submitted as well, where we do have copies, and we have. Plentiful information in our packet. And I think the commission understands what the sentiment is here in the room. At the same time, we do need to get this right. I think that if we have all the information that we feel is necessary, then we can make a hopefully a decision that can be have some finality to it and something that can resolve this and maybe put some of this at ease for the residents and the property owner. I'm also sensitive to our chair and our co-chair who aren't here present tonight. And I do value their input as well. I think tabling this would be appropriate, and I would second the motion.
Any further discussion? Let's vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Nay.
Three ayes, one nay. All right, the motion is tabled until our following meeting.
Can we do a 5 minutes?
I don't know if that's going to work.
John?
We'll take a 5 minute recess.
Yeah.
But I also think let's get it right and get it settled.
Next item, discussion on amending the city code to allow artificial turf as a landscape option. Chandler.
All right. I appreciate Mr. Stewart's insight on this, given his background in turf. Can you? Good. Is it picking up? Okay. We've had a resident that approached the city council in public comment and asked for the city to consider amending the land use ordinance regarding landscaping to allow for artificial turf. I don't know if you had a chance to read 10.5.27. Most recently we reviewed it to allow for certain types of xeriscaping. But this would be a different change. And I've been told that there already is a place in the city where someone has artificial turf. I haven't seen it.
I have.
It's on my street.
Is it on your street?
It is.
I'll have to go take a look. I haven't got any complaints on it. Just keep that in mind. But our current landscaping ordinance applies to the front of the yard, the yard that's visible from the street. We require that people put in their landscaping within 1 year of taking occupancy. And if they don't do that, then we assess them a monthly fine. And this individual was beginning to be assessed a monthly fine, I believe, and asked that, she was considering doing artificial turf, and she asked that the fine be delayed or postponed or waived until this matter was considered. And so here we are. Anyway. Ogden most recently adopted an ordinance that allowed for artificial turf, which was interesting because this is a case where the Planning Commission made a negative recommendation to not approve it. The City Council went and approved it anyway. I think that Rick Stewart brought up the issues surrounding artificial turf quite nicely. I don't know that I'm going to add anything to it that he didn't. But I know that there are concerns. I have my concerns on artificial turf. That's it. So, this is just a discussion item. I didn't want to make a review. I try to not do review actions to be the first thing you see. I'd like rather have a discussion on it and then come back, bring it back to a review action. So that's why the discussion is going to kind of decide where staff goes in drafting an ordinance if we draft an ordinance.
So typically the kinds of issues that I think we'd be concerned about would be appearance and then detrimental effects to their neighbors and or the city. For example, if there's runoff from the turf that was a strange color or something, that would affect the city and everything else.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect to happen in this.
I think that would be probably the result of a faulty manufacturer, which is probably not typical. No.
Exactly.
Nonetheless, the items that Rick brought up, I think, are pertinent to the discussion.
So, I try to weigh, what's the upside? Why would somebody want artificial turf? Well, for maintenance, they don't have to pay for water. They don't have to worry about it dying. Mm-hmm. They like green. We're presuming that they're using a green turf. you know, people want the feel of a lawn or the look, the green of a lawn without having a lawn and having to maintain it. Yeah. I have a brown lawn right now. It makes me feel really bad. But
I wish my neighbors had artificial turf.
Yeah. Well, I have an HOA situation, but that's another thing. The cons, what Mr. Stewart reiterated, or
iterated,
and I'll reiterate. The natural aspect, you're going to have. Well, first and foremost, I think the variation on the quality of it, where it would be very difficult for the city to regulate the quality that goes in, how it's going to look, how it's going to last, in that aspect, how does it drain, other issues.
You can ask for, as far as engineering, showing like your perk rates, showing that it's not just going to create runoff into the city storm drain. Showing that, I think, is something that the city can require, because that can be shown through manufacturer warranties or manufacturer tests. They can provide that documentation to our building department. I think that answers one of your questions, but one of them, we can't guarantee quality.
Right, and you're going to have people that are going to buy the high-end version, people are going to buy the cheap version, and like, you know.
Not to interrupt you, but Ogden's ordinance is pretty specific.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's very specific.
I mean, it speaks to a lot of quality issues.
I wonder, though, is Ogden the only city in Utah that allows this?
Not that I know. I would doubt that they are. They had an ample amount of information that we could poach from.
Okay.
They went to great lengths, have a minimum tufted weight of 56 ounces per square yard.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a plush pile of strands.
Yeah. And I think one thing I've been kind of bouncing around is, if you aren't comfortable with it in the front yard, you allow it in the backyard.
Well, right now, you can do it in the backyard, right? There's no ordinance requirement.
Yeah, but you specifically enumerate that this is allowed in the backyard, so it's not a question. But the front yard I have issues with. This is just me personally.
So I don't like it, and I'm not in favor of it. But there are situations in the backyard where it is appropriate for a putting green or something like that.
Sure, I've seen it.
But that's different than landscaping. Yeah. I mean, that's like equivalent of a basketball court. That's a recreation place. Obviously, you know, in the packet were the issues about the heat and the dangers of the temperature. There was the news report that I saw
on KSL.
That's different.
I know that
is literally ground up tires with some cosmetic green ribbons on top. That's why that retains heat. Mm-hmm. So this stuff's a lot different. At least described in Ogden's.
As they've allowed it.
What's that?
As they've allowed it, it's different than what you're saying. It's different than like.
Well, the news report was on football fields.
Right.
And that is literally ground up black chunks of tire.
Right.
With a little cosmetic green ribbon that has no functional effect on top. So you're literally standing on ground up black rubber.
So I don't know. I think it looks tacky. You know, I think of Brady Bunch, but obviously we have much higher quality and better looking now. I think it's part of Cedar Hills, part of the general plan is the open space and the natural feel. I think this takes away from the natural feel.
Back when we were doing the Xeriscape amendment, for adding that, is there something we could maybe add to that, saying natural materials used in the front part of the lot? Whether it's,
is your purpose there to disallow it or express
it? Yeah, I would disallow plastic as part of your landscape. That, you know, as the main part of your landscape.
That would almost negate somebody being able to put in a pressed concrete paver block.
No, that's not part of your. Well.
Well, it could be though. It could be because we've allowed stamped concrete to be considered as landscaping.
I appreciate Xeriscape. I appreciate people that say, hey, I don't want to use water. I think it's a waste to have a green lawn in a desert, but still want a natural scape. My in-laws live in Arizona. You know, they have rocks in their front yard.
Yeah.
And it's done nicely, and there's variations and different things that can be done for a low-maintenance, low-water front yard that's not turf, and it looks natural. I think it still fits in with our general plan. I have a strong preference for that over artificial turf.
Yeah. I have a hard time comparing Xeriscape with artificial turf. They just don't seem like they're comparable. One is using natural, native, low water vegetation. There is a little bit of maintenance. There is water, but
I think the overlap is low maintenance, low water, but it ends there.
Okay. Now, like I said, this is just a discussion item. How would you like us to proceed as we move forward? They came to the city council, so I think the city council is expecting to hear something on this going forward. We can present some code to the planning commission for your review recommendation. And you could be like Ogden and say, we don't like this. I guess I'm just asking, how would you like the staff to proceed? How do you foresee this going?
Well, the ordinance is silent on...
It is.
So I think, regardless, it ought to be...
It needs to be addressed.
Specific.
It can be, addressed in the other way. They can be saying, no artificial turf.
Someone's going to make the argument, well, you didn't exclude it.
Yeah.
Well, which is exactly what happened in the Ogden case. You didn't say I couldn't. You didn't say we could.
You could.
Yeah.
So I would.
There's strong arguments on that.
I think this needs to be a review.
So is that the way you want us
to present code?
I'm just taking a strong poll here that to disallow this to occur in the front yard.
For me, yes.
Is that the way that I'm hearing?
That's the way I would do it.
Present code.
Personally, I could live with Ogden's ordinance. Frankly, I mean, it's so specific.
Today.
What's that?
You're the odd man out today.
If someone wants to spend that kind of money,
he can be the odd man. It's all good.
They would spend more putting that in than they would real grass. Now the water and the maintenance down the road is different, but this is not cheap stuff.
And that's probably the biggest thing for me is even if you put it in, even if it looked good, in 6 years or 8 years, it's not going to look good. They're going to have to put it in again.
Shall have a minimum 8-year manufacturer warranty protecting against color fading and decrease in pile height.
I get stuff with 8-year warranties all the time. 4 years later in Utah, it's shredded.
Winters and summers.
Winters and summers. The summers particularly, it's brutal up here. That 8-year manufacturer's warranty is at sea level. And
actually, there's a Utah company that has 8-year warranty.
Really?
I checked on the internet today.
Man, maybe they got something that's better than I thought.
Utah artificial turf or something.
Outside after 8 years.
Your fence?
Pretty bad.
Your fence? Do you have vinyl fence?
I don't. I have a wood fence that I've stained several times.
My vinyl fence hasn't faded.
I'm wondering how this might affect the transfer of property values. Wondering how, it's like, I don't know. I mean, somebody that can purchase.
We have to worry about if they put it in, they're selling the house.
Yeah.
They shoot themselves in the foot if somebody doesn't like it. That's fine. That's them.
But
the neighbors I worry about.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be next to a house with artificial turf, but.
So you have to present one way or another to allow or to disallow as the recommendation comes before us.
Exactly. And I mean, we can go two routes. I can present two sets of code and just say which one are you going to recommend at the city council?
I think Chairman Driggs expressed that he's not in favor of this.
As did Jeff Dodge.
Yes, both of them did.
So it sounds like that's the kind of the consensus I'm hearing. So we can draft code to pursue as such.
And can that be presented as soon as next month?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that and then we'll...
Okay.
We decide we don't like that. Yeah. I want to do more research. And I want to go by Danny's street and see somebody that's already done it.
I'll give you that.
Is it front yard?
Front yard.
What is the address?
Oh, I'd like to see that.
Because I don't know where you live. I was just going to look it up.
I'm driving by on the way home.
It's too dark.
Tomorrow.
It is 10382.
Bay Hill?
10382.
Yeah.
I'm going on a field trip tomorrow.
Boy, we all are.
But okay. Even if it lasts 8 years, what are the chances that in 8 years they're going to replace it?
Right.
They're not going to.
Because it's just like anything that gets old. Like yeah. It's just so slow and progressive that you don't really notice
just get
it.
Used to it.
Until it yeah. really tears or something.
Yeah, or somebody complains to you or something.
Hire the Brady kids tomorrow.
I'll be honest, right. Chandler, I am influenced at home. My wife wants to replace a large section of our backyard with AstroTurf. She has asked me several times if we can do that.
The backyard. Backyard. Different than
backyard. Backyard. Because we have one section of our backyard that it just we struggle keeping because of our neighbor keeping weeds down and other things.
So they actually have a provision in their ordinance.
And you can put it in the code that
it must be replaced if worn, uneven, discolored, or damaged.
Or if your neighbors hate it.
But well, basically, what that does is that gives the neighbor a private right of action. And so if the city doesn't want to take on that enforcement, the neighbor can sue them to enforce that.
Yeah. Because it's tough
if they feel strongly enough about it.
Seems like what you're saving in maintenance and water, you're expending in the actual replacement and installation every 8 years if you're doing it.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not advocating. I'm just if someone really wants it, there's been someone who's thought it out pretty carefully.
Mm-hmm. It's ugly. Don't.
No, I'm not going
to. That's what the new one looks like. I'm comparing it to football field AstroTurf because that's what's in my head.
Yeah,
that's what I'm
that's
familiar
different.
With.
It's a lot.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I want to compare. But I think the way to, if you don't want to write two different drafts up and down, I think write one that's down and then if we don't like that, we'll change it.
And then do we want to expressly allow it in backyards? Or just leave it
open? I don't
open,
think we, I don't think we need to address backyards. It's been so open now.
Okay.
That,
all right. Just let it ask.
I'm sorry. I just answered there.
No,
does anybody here care about backyards?
I mean, we don't we love
well,
to
say not,
I mean,
well,
you care about backyards. You care
could
about
be
backyards.
Yeah. Well, now that I think about it, because I...
What about corner
lots? I've lived here in Utah for...
The corner lots, you have the
you
whole
front side. Front side, that's not
front
bad.
Front side, that's different.
Yeah.
I've lived in Utah not nearly as long as anybody here, about 5 years. And
maybe.
And so when I think of backyards, I still think of California where every backyard is fenced. And so, and there's a lot of
there are
non-fenced
backyards here.
Yeah. And that might be an issue if you're wanting to put it in. Especially, you know, like the Cedars or something where the house is pretty tight. And I mean, you're looking out your window into somebody else's mm-hmm. place and you could have,
and
you could have AstroTurf that belongs to somebody else 10 feet from your back door.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we need to think about that. Backyards could be an issue. If it's a fenced backyard, it's
kind of
private.
Well, there's different kinds of fences. You can have the lower
yeah.
fence. You could have the split rail fence.
Yeah.
You can have the wrought iron fence. And
so you allow them on closed
fences? I think it's something to consider. I think it's something to think about.
I think the ordinance is written that what we're talking about should, this is opinion, should address front yards. And I think backyards we can address separately. Maybe that's
at the same time.
Do it at the same time? He's right.
I think
if you talk about landscaping
right,
for backyards,
it should be the only code related to backyards.
Yeah.
So if you either
just generally say it's not allowed, and that covers it,
yeah.
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it maybe
it's not allowed at all for landscaping. I don't know. They might read that as meaning it's not allowed for backyards.
It's already
right,
in some.
Right now, you can put all sorts of things in backyards, and nobody's gonna stop you.
Yeah, and maybe the Cedars wasn't.
Yeah, I was gonna say that.
Maybe the Cedars wasn't a good example because they're an HOA and they can build that in to prevent that. And so
yeah.
that probably wasn't the best example, but there are other areas
are
where
there,
there's
sure.
that aren't fenced.
I see your point. I think it's a valid point.
To think about.
What I'm talking about is on the corner down as you're going into Carriage. In between the 8th and 9th Ward. There's a split rail
right.
fence on a corner lot. There's their putting green right there.
Do you find it objectionable?
No, because it's putting green. For some reason, I think...
Which I think is like a basketball court.
Yeah,
it's a true. It's a recreation
it's a recreational
thing.
And so it doesn't...
It's not landscaping.
Mm-hmm. So I just think you have to be careful if you're going to... allow it in backyards? Do you,
if you want it in your backyard, put in some holes for golf balls.
Great, so that's easy. Well, it's just I don't think there's any other part of our ordinance that discusses backyard landscaping.
No, I don't. It should be the only
slippery slope.
Yeah.
As soon as we start writing code from the backyard, we have to finish that job, and that makes it big. Yeah, that's why he's up there. He doesn't want to write that much.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm not saying that we have to. I'm just saying we got to think about that as well. Just point it out.
Okay. All right. All right. That's good direction.
Can I just make a comment? My son moved to Syracuse, and the people right behind them put carpeting in
the backyard. Oh. I've seen it on a patio.
The water would go through. This was their water would go through, kept down the weeds, but that allowed them to put the money into landscaping in the front yard. Eventually, they got around to putting grass back there, but it was there for 10 years.
The bathroom carpets was bad.
Oh, yeah, so stinky.
People will do weird things.
They do weird things.
Okay, are we?
How do I move to the next?
Just move on.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the final item. Hopefully, we can discuss this efficiently.
Okay.
Okay.
Go. This is a discussion of renewable energy systems, ground-mounted solar. We are not talking about roof-mounted solar. We're not talking about wind. We're only talking about ground-mounted solar, right?
How ground?
On the ground, mounted to the ground. I don't understand the question.
On posts or yes. Touching the ground?
Ground-mounted. So if it's on the pole and that pole's mounted to the ground.
Then that counts.
Ground-mounted. And there's various kinds. There are.
Yes.
Specifically, there is an instance where the city, and this application came in prior to this code being adopted, that somebody wanted to do ground-mounted solar. And their ground-mounted solar is, we've received a number of complaints about it because it is, I think
hot.
Your neighbor putting in artificial turf would be annoying. This would probably be
this is yours.
So what they've done is it's a pole and then they've got a big, and I don't know the square footage off the top of my head, but it's large, and it can rotate it with the sun. And they've put it in a way where if it's rotated a certain way, it overhangs the property line, and they've been instructed from the city that that is never to occur. If it is, they're in violation, and they have to rip it out. So they have that kind of this window where they can rotate it with it out it encroaching on this on the property line. However, it does – the complaints we received are related to the view sheds, you know, because this is what you look out your backyard, and all of a sudden, rather than seeing – Utah Lake and landscape or whatever, you see a big solar panel installation.
Do you know how tall it is, more or less?
I want to say it's close to 20 feet.
Oh.
It's big.
Wow.
And that's because we allow accessory structures to be up to 20 feet.
As tall as a house.
Most houses are, you know, between 25 and 35.
35, yeah.
But, I mean, this is a tall structure. So the question then is, how do we proceed? Do we want this in our city? Or do you scale it back and limit the height to something what I feel is more reasonable with a limitation on square footage of ground-mountable solar or like some sort of ratio of area of land versus ground-mounted solar?
I thought we already discussed this last year. Maybe you can clarify the result of that discussion last year and why we have to address it again.
We allow it.
So, I guess I didn't follow up on what city council did, but I recall the recommendation of this.
We didn't allow for roof-mounted wind turbines. That's what we took out.
But I remember specifically talking with other commissioners at a hearing, bringing up that there's that giant array. If you go to Costco, but the one the Big Dip.
I thought that was wind though.
No, that's
solar. It's a huge solar.
I don't go that way to Costco. So
and it's probably 20 feet by 20 feet, and it takes up half their front yard.
Yeah.
And it is the most unsightly thing I've ever seen.
Okay.
Well, that's hyperbole, but that's it's very unsightly.
Okay, so with that, we don't have a limitation like that, so that's what we're bringing forward and as a discussion. What do you want to see? Do you want to see a change?
Is this something that you want us to further address? This was at the request of a resident made to Councilmember Daniels. Paula brought it up in a city council meeting, and now we're here.
But this won't have the effect of removing...
No. It won't affect that one. That one would be grandfathered in. It would be future. And we don't get a ton of ground-mounted solar. It's not a common thing to do. But nonetheless, it has happened in...
How many do we currently have?
One that I know of. I'm sure that someone has... I mean, I'm not talking like little solar lights in your landscaping.
Right.
I'm talking like ground-mounted solar. Applications I've seen are one.
I was looking at some other cities and states that have struggled with this, and some of them have said, well, you know, is there a fence blocking this from the road or from other neighbors from the ground view?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, do we consider it an attractive nuisance? You know, are there going to be children who can access that or, you know, people
and
that could get in?
We talked about that because, as I recall, we did talk about that.
So, but we didn't put anything in place.
I think what we talked about was making sure it was high enough the kids couldn't get hurt by it. And I think more the...
But keep in mind, this application was before that code was changed.
Sure.
So keep that in mind.
But still, if we're allowing 20 feet...
Exactly what you're talking
this,
about.
The person could still do the same thing. So
yeah.
I'm just trying to say that code didn't affect that application. But had that application come in after the code, they still probably would have been able to do something similar.
So can you solve it with a setback?
You...
To keep it off the line?
You can. That solves one of your problems.
See, even if you limit it to...
But once again, it's got to be, if you're only going to address the setback, it's got to be a formula. Whereas the width of the panels and twice
square
that is the
setback.
For instance, Aspen only allows 200 square feet of ground-mounted solar, but they still say it is still just a source of problem between neighbors.
Yeah.
There's a reason why it's not common.
Well, absolutely. See, in order for solar to be effective, efficient in my house, to make sense financially, I'd need ground mount.
Because your roof line isn't...
The way my roof line's up and how much electricity we use in the summer, I can't do that with just on the roof.
I've read about all the benefits of ground mounted, but...
So, having said that, the only way for me to do it would be to put it in the backyard. I'm not going to give up my backyard for solar panels, so that's not going to happen for me. I'm fine with that. That's my decision. The idea of having a 20-foot... is really annoying. On the other hand, I've got a neighbor that's got an entire backyard that's trees that are over 20 feet. And I hate them.
But they're natural.
But that's the way it is. They're not natural. They're all imported and they're all nasty.
Well.
And I love my neighbor. Aspen trees are bad neighbors. Okay. And they're all over my yard. Okay. So saying 20 feet because of the appearance, your neighbor's got a basketball hoop. It's fake and it's 15 feet high and it's sitting and you see it out of your backyard. And nobody cares because it's basketball and they like basketball. Narrowing it down saying you can't put a solar panel that's that tall there because I don't like solar but I like basketball, so put a basketball hoop up, is kind of hypocritical to me.
But a basketball...
If it's large and solid and artificial, that's way different from a basketball hoop. So I think that is something we can look at. What are the setbacks? What's the size and the scale of it?
I think part of the problem between neighbor and neighbor is that the reflective glare on that.
No, there you go. That's it.
That's
a direct
the
thing
point.
That
yeah.
Really hurt the neighbor.
Right.
Because the glare off one of those would be
so
terrible.
Glare.
So
any reflective
if I'm
heat.
Listing the issues, I'm hearing setback, square footage.
Square footage, absolutely. Scale of it is a big deal.
Refraction.
Reflection.
Heat and light.
Reflection.
Yeah, of heat and light. Well, they go together.
Height.
I think height's a big deal. I really do.
Okay.
But yeah, how tall it is, but also how high is it from the ground? Is it accessible by children? You know, is it a danger? Because they get really hot.
High enough, but not too high.
Right.
Well, and if you have it under a certain feet, then you have to have a fence.
Right.
Okay, so what I...
Is that the attractive nuisance idea, that the kids might get out and play on it and get hurt?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think that's a good argument. I mean, kids would, but it'd be very hard to argue that a solar panel is an attractive nuisance for a child.
Unattractive.
Oh.
Okay.
Well,
any 10-year-old person in our neighborhood, they'll climb on anything they can.
Well, I'm just going off of research that I've done on that.
It's not the same as a trampoline or a
pool. It's not as a trampoline. Yeah. See, if you have a trampoline, don't have a fetch.
If it's just something to climb, then there's a lot of things that are attractive.
Trees,
but,
cars.
But houses. A court's not going to find it as an attractive nuisance.
There is, I can hear.
Were we supposed to be gone at 9?
Can we just vote like not tap?
We can just say we just assume if we don't want to allow these, we need to amend the code. Because the code right now allows it. And like I said, while I'm sympathetic to and I understand it, I don't know anywhere in Cedar Hills where it makes sense to do ground mounted that is not going to be detrimental to the neighborhood.
I mean,
maybe a dozen lots, you know, or something. But
I'm still unclear what happened with the discussion last year, but I'll still hold my position that I oppose it. I think that there's a lot of issues, and it's just going to be a point of contention. And I think
I do think it's I think it is a point of contention between neighbors. But as I go forward, based on the feedback I'm getting, we're not looking at disallowing it.
We're just talking
about. We're just talking about that. Maybe certainly the easiest thing to do is to disallow it.
Yeah, it is the easiest, but I don't know that that's.
Or we can allow it with.
So many restrictions.
Very narrow.
Very narrow confines.
Yeah. I mean, we need to have a specific idea of what is acceptable, in order to tailor those restrictions.
Lot size.
And we can. And this isn't something that has to just be addressed the next month.
No.
We can. Do some research and get this.
I'd like to elicit a comment.
Well, I was just thinking about what Lorianne just said. If you did it according to lot size, if your lot, you know, was large enough to accommodate within a specific parameter size of mm-hmm. ground-mounted solar, but where you're maybe on a quarter-acre lot, you're so close to your neighbors, I don't think that's feasible. It doesn't make any sense.
There comes a size where it wouldn't be a problem, sure.
Right. Yeah.
But that's not going to be most lots in the city.
But then that takes care of both things you allow, but at the same time, it disallows it for most people.
That would be the same thing. I mean, that's how it is for a lot of.
It's how it is for animals.
That's what I was going to say, animal rights.
Like horses.
I can't have goats or horses mm-hmm. on my property. That's the same thing. So I think that would be a good way to go. You know? Is to determine by lot size and still make the parameters.
And those, and those larger lots with the horses, they'd probably be able to pop in there. Mm-hmm. Ground mounted solar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Without any effect to their neighbor.
Except for your horses.
So we can maybe
your horses. That's your horses. So
maybe we get a formula that kind of addresses lot size versus.
It's probably lot size. Heights.
The setback, I think there's an easy way to do the setback. I think it's the width. And then times a certain amount of feet you want to keep it away from the property line.
Right.
You know, and then, so that one I think is easy to do. I think that the formula based on lot size would probably be limiting the square footage of ground mounted solar.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know what else it would limit. And then I think maybe additionally the height could be tied to the setback as well. Meaning like the further you are from the property line, the higher up you can go up to a certain point. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And maybe throw in verbiage. I want to make sure we're not trying to write code about little solar lights in your backyard or something. Something that's incidental. If you're below a certain square footage of solar panel, like one, you're fine.
Yeah. Well, and quite frankly, the city has ground-mounted solar on our water tanks. Powers
public facilities zone.
It powers our water systems. We can read tank levels. So for us, it's important. Otherwise, we're spending thousands of dollars to run power somewhere. We don't want to do that. We'd rather buy the Oak Grove parcel.
How does this affect the fencing ordinance for this 16th? And how is that going to impact if you have this solar?
I think they're independent of
one. I think they would be independent of each other.
Were you thinking of raising the fence height? Is that what you meant, to hide the solar?
No.
No. Oh, no. I wouldn't even consider that idea.
No, that would be.
They could do that with those 20-foot trees.
No.
I'd have the question.
Then you don't get solar.
I think you can look at these two independently of each other.
A 6-foot fence limit, and you're going to allow 20 feet?
You do now. If you want to build a shed, you can have it 20 feet high.
That's the outside of the shed. So.
Garage and sheds.
If it goes up to 20 feet high, you're into an accessory building, which you can't put it up to the property line in that case.
Right.
So, I mean, there's provisions. But, this is a little different. So I think we can look at these two items independently of each other, fences and solar panels. Because if I have a 6-foot fence and I want to put ground-mounted solar right next to my property line, and if we're going through some of these formulas, then it may not work out for me because I may not be able to put it up high enough to get light.
Exactly.
That's just the cost of my lot. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just kind of like it doesn't pan out for you in your house.
That's not going to make sense.
So, I mean, we can't address every concern like that, but we can certainly try to reduce the impact it has on surrounding areas. So, okay.
All right. I'll entertain a motion.
I move to adjourn.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Who's
Right.